Okay. I can be trained. Okay. So, sorry that I took a moment. New system. This is my first time doing the YouTube Live, everybody. Checking out StreamYard. So, I'm going to do that instead of Zoom today, see how it goes. And, obviously, I have Margaret Rogerson in here, who you're here to see. You're not here to see me. We all know that. But since she knows herself way better than I do, I'm going to go ahead and let Margaret introduce herself quickly in case anybody doesn't know who she is.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm really excited. My name is Margaret Rogerson. I am the author of 3 young adult fantasy novels and 1 novella. My most recent release was Mysteries of Thorn Manor, which came out last January. And the one that we're here to talk about is Vespertine, which is about a girl who is training to be a nun who, when her convent is attacked, awakens an ancient spirit bound to a saint's relic and wields its power to battle the undead. Aside from that, I live near Cincinnati, Ohio, and I have a one-eyed cat named Commodore.
Who I so badly wanted to hear you named him Cyclops, but that's just the, that's the dad joke in me. So actually, I got a little bit farther. I will let everybody know. I don't normally read as much as I do on an author. I usually read whatever is the latest. But after reading Vespertine, I actually read your first 2 books as well. And to say that they are quick and easy, I got all 3 of those done in a week.
Wow.
So yeah, absolutely love them. I don't know if you've seen them. No, don't worry if you haven't. I did put up a review of the first 2 books of Vespertine and An Enchantment of Ravens. And I really wish that I had watched them in order, because once you've read Vespertine, I think everything else has to pale just a little bit in comparison. I love that book so much. Before we get into that, I do have a few generic questions that I always like to ask the authors. And somebody can also let me know if I'm talking too loud. You did your bio. First question I have for most authors, what is your super villain origin story? In other words, a lot of people love to read. Some people like to write, but very few people actually have the gumption to get up and actually do the writing. What made you want to write? And then what actually got you through to the point that you became a published author?
That's a good question. I've wanted to be a writer for as long as I can remember, and I've loved reading for as long as I can remember. I know that when I was a baby, my mom always jokes that she wasn't super maternal and didn't really know how to take care of children. So she would just read books to me and my brother, even when we were babies who couldn't understand words. She raised us by just continually reading books to us. And I always wonder if that had something to do with it. Although my parents were both big fantasy readers, so it could also just be genetics. I think part of why I went on to become an author is just partly because I'm not good at anything else. It's really my one life skill is writing, my one marketable life skill, I would say. I'm also good at other things like identifying species of trees, for example. But writing seems to be the only thing that I'm really very good at. And so I think it was just sort of a natural choice. After I graduated from college, I was at a point in my life where I had some free time, and I thought, well, if I'm going to try to write a book, I might as well try to do it right now. And the rest is history, I suppose.
No, perfect answer. I think especially the free time helps. So it's a lot of the authors you see, it's either the very early they hop in, like you did, like right out of college, you did your writing, you know, see how it went. And by the way, it's doing very well. Or it's the people, you know, you get to a certain age and it's like, you get close to retirement, it's like, you know, I finally got time to write that book. So we are enjoying the fact that you've gotten a few books out. I've enjoyed all of them, except for, I didn't get to the novella, but I'm going to, because the way you left off Sorcery of Thorns, I've got to see what happens next. All right. So also, sorry, my brother's letting me know I am yelling a little bit. I'm getting a little too loud, so sorry about that. What is a day in the life of Margaret Rogerson look like?
So I used to be a night owl. I used to be someone who would sleep in and then stay up really late if given the choice to do so. Nowadays, I'm a morning person because I've discovered that despite it not being in my nature, I get a lot more work done if I get started really early in the morning. So I tend to be editing my work over breakfast. Typically, I start my day by editing the work that I did the previous day, and then I will move on to new material after that. I try to usually go for a certain amount of words per day. That number used to be 1,200. I'm now very lucky if I get 1,200 words in a day. I'm a lot slower than I used to be, ironically. I think a lot of authors will tell you that as you become a better author, writing actually becomes a lot harder because you know what your potential is and you are really dissatisfied with the sort of bad work that you often have to churn out to complete a first draft. So I do actually write a lot slower, ironically, now than I used to, which is a shame. But yeah, I shoot for a certain number of words per day. If I finish early, I get to play a little bit of World of Warcraft lately. So that's been my compelling goal for the day.
Yeah, I think Fortnite's my guilty pleasure. do you have, like, I know, for instance, I know authors that like to go to a cafe or go outside, weather permitting. Some have a studio. Do you have a specific place that you like to write?
I would say it's sort of dependent on the weather. I do actually really love to write outside if it's a beautiful day out. Otherwise, I sort of rotate around different spots in my apartment, depending on what the, you know, which window the sun is shining through. If it's a really miserable day, sometimes I will actually write in bed. I'll just prop myself up in bed and write, which I've heard you're not supposed to do because it confuses your brain into thinking that you're working all the time and it makes it harder to sleep. I have personally never had that problem. I love sleeping. I think I could sleep in any situation under any conditions practically. So I've not had that problem personally. The one place I don't write is public spaces. I'm not someone who can focus when I'm around other people. So if it's a coffee shop or something of that nature, I never work in coffee shops.
No, I get that. Yeah, I think the biggest problem I would have, again, when I was younger, I could sleep anywhere, you know, do anything like that. I think right now, if I tried to like write in bed after about like an hour, either my neck or back would be like, dude, go find a chair. It's like, I can't do that anymore.
I will say I found a super good pillow for sitting up in bed with. It's a triangle shaped pillow and it's fantastic. Yeah, I actually bought it after I started to have really severe back pain from sitting up in bed, and it works. It's amazing.
Nice. But we'll have to see if they'll get you a promo later.
Yeah, right.
So obviously right out of college, it sounded like you started writing. Looks like you put out a book about every 2 years, I'm noticing. So maybe next year. What do you do when you're not writing? What do you like to do?
I am a big nature person. I love to be outside. I love to go on hikes. I love to find weird bugs and toads and mushrooms. I play World of Warcraft, as I mentioned earlier. I play an undead holy priest as my main. I am also sort of an artist. I'm a hobby artist. I wouldn't really call myself a real artist, but I used to do portraits in high school, and now I just kind of draw for fun occasionally. So, yeah, that's another hobby of mine. I also have a weird hobby, which is that I like to take photographs of things that are shaped like butts. I have a whole collection in my phone of butt-shaped objects, whether that's a mushroom. You would be surprised by the number of mushrooms that look like butts. It's remarkable, actually. I have so many spectacular photos. Yeah, but you don't need to know more about that.
I'm trying not to make a stupid, you know, juvenile shiitake mushroom joke right about now.
Oh, no, that's great. I'll hold on to that idea.
All right. Couple things before I get into the books themselves. One, just normally I wrote ask this at the end, but I realize this fits in real well here. Do you have a secret skill or fact that maybe you wish more people knew about you?
A secret skill or fact?
You know, black belt in ninjutsu, hiding in the closet, or?
I do have a coastal sailing license, which I earned a long time ago, and it may not still be valid. But sailing licenses are a lot different than driver's licenses, so it may actually still be valid. I used to be able to sail a solo figure eight. I could tack and jibe by myself, which is actually quite difficult when you're on a large sailboat. Not large, but like a 20-something footer. So yeah, I actually never really talk about that. That was a skill that I used to
I was thinking it's fine because, I mean, you, especially like an author, everybody knows you write. They probably talk to you about writing. If somebody's like a nurse, people always want to talk about medical. It's like, but you always seem to have, everybody's got that part of themselves that it's like, you know, why doesn't anybody ever ask me about this? So I just always like to draw that out. While we're talking about writing, what is a piece of advice, either one that you wish somebody had given you earlier or the best piece of advice you got? And it doesn't necessarily have to be writing specifically. It could be publishing, marketing. I know a lot of authors don't realize how much marketing they have to do. It's like, I just want to write a book and be left alone. But what piece of advice did you get or did you wish that you'd gotten sooner?
I think that the best piece of advice that I got, actually probably two of them. One of them is that it's okay to write a really bad first draft. I think that people tend to forget, and that not only that, but that the finished book that you submit to agents and editors doesn't have to be perfect, because I think writers have a habit of comparing our work to our favorite books on the shelves. And what we don't tend to think about, or what beginning writers don't tend to think about, is that that book that's on the shelf has gone through multiple rounds of professional editing. It's not the same version of the book that was submitted to the editors in the first place. And I think it's really easy to get discouraged when you find that your own writing just does not live up to the books that you love. But you really have to keep in mind that books are, in a sense, a group effort, and that you will have help to bring the book to that level. So the completed work does not have to be perfect by any means. And that, in fact, it is completely normal for first drafts of books to be garbage, complete unreadable garbage, even from authors that you admire, books that you loved. It's very possible that that book started out as a completely unreadable manuscript, as was the case, for example, with Vespertine. And then I think the second piece of advice is to write the book that you want to read, not the book that you think would make other people proud of you, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I think this happened to me with my first book, which was that I was so caught up in this idea that I had to prove to people that I was a good writer, and that I had to write something that was in no way embarrassing or overly personal, or that would reveal too much of myself, my deep innermost self, to people that I didn't know, or that I did know, even worse, and they might think, oh wow, she's so weird, or her jokes are so unfunny, you know. And I think breaking through that barrier is very important for a writer, because what readers connect to is that authentic part of yourself, even if it is weird or kind of, you know, unsavory, or you know, people connect to what is real and what is authentic. Mm-hmm. And if you guard yourself too much against putting that in your work because you are afraid of being vulnerable, then you will just sabotage your work. And that was a hard lesson to learn, but a very important one for me.
Well, I like to tell authors too, especially because I've talked to authors who have only got a few books under their belt, or, you know, ones that have got multiple bestsellers under their belt. I feel like you're not a real author until you get that first one-star review. Because at some point, if you make, he's never going to be on the program, so I'll throw him under the bus. James Patterson, I feel like he writes books that appeal to the masses. And I think a lot of people, and I like his books, but I don't necessarily love his books. I think if you write the book that nobody has anything to complain about to, nobody's also going to love it either. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, once you get that one-star review, you know you've made it to enough of the masses that you finally reach that person who is never going to like your book anyhow.
Yeah, it's a very good point.
One thing I noticed about your books, and I've got the review for the second book that you wrote. I'm not going to have it out until tomorrow because I got this going on tonight. But I really feel reading your books, and again, I said if I'd read them in order, Enchantment of Ravens was first, Sorcery of Thorns was second. Each one of your books, I feel like you have gotten consistently better. And it's not that you started from a low point. I liked An Enchantment of Ravens. I don't think I was the target demographic for Enchantment of Ravens, but I liked Enchantment of Ravens. And I thought that Sorcery of Thorns was even better. And I think by the time we got to Vespertine, like I said, for me, that was a five-star for me on Goodreads. And I don't five-star a lot. I four-star a lot. I don't five-star a lot. I feel like each one of your stories, even though they're completely separate, they're not part of the same group, I feel like you've grown with each book. For instance, Enchantment of Ravens, absolutely positively, that is a YA book. I feel like Sorcery of Thorns still has some YA in it, but it was much more mature in a lot of respects. And I think finally, by the time you got to Vespertine, now you may have marketed that as a YA, but to me, I feel like that's a YA in name only. That's a YA because the main protagonist is, I believe, a 16-year-old girl. That book was much more adult fantasy to me, not necessarily from mature themes, but I feel like anybody, even somebody in their 60s or 70s, could pick up that book and absolutely enjoy it.
Oh, thank you. It's interesting because Vespertine, I originally did start writing it as an adult novel. And then my publisher made an offer on it. So I changed it to YA because my publisher is a YA or is a children's imprint.
Which is understandable. I don't know if you know who Lydia Kang is, but I talked to her one time and she mentioned the fact that her publisher actually wants to strangle her sometimes because she writes in multiple genres. And she's like, and publishers think that all of your fans all want to read the same book. You know, you need a 20 book series of this character and they don't like jumping around. So I totally get that. But like I said, I know you see, that makes a lot more sense to me now too, that you said that when you started it out, it wasn't YA, because I really, really felt like the fact that she was, again, I think she was 16. Is that right?
17.
17. Okay. Yeah. I think they're all 17 then. Aren't Isabel, Elizabeth, and...
Elizabeth starts out 16 and a half.
She's
16. Yeah.
Okay. I knew one of them was 16. So they're all about the same age. But yeah, it was... Vespertine to me was a much... You could put that on the shelf next to any other fantasy novel, and I thought it stacked up well. Not that there's anything wrong with YA. I'm a big Neil Schusterman fan, and he's a big YA guy. But I also feel, to me, and I kind of put you in that same category, sometimes certain books are YA in name only. A lot of Schusterman stuff, it may be in the YA section, but I don't really feel like it's a YA book, and I feel you're the same way. And that just, like I said, that's just my take on it.
Have you read Maggie Stiefvater?
No, she's on my TBR list. She's one of those ones that always seems to get bumped for somebody else.
I would check out Scorpio Races. I think you might like it. Yeah. Oh,
yep.
And Frances Harding. I would check out the work of Frances Harding.
Now, that one I don't know off the top of my head, but I will look that up.
She's not very well known in the States, but she's a very prestigious British author. She writes sort of very hard to categorize. It's typically marketed as YA or middle grade. But it's very hard. It's very hard to categorize. Her work is exceptional.
Let's face it. There's a few of those. But we really want to categorize them so we know where to put them on the shelf. Okay, so let's start. I know you were all ready for Vespertine, but let's start out with Enchantment of Ravens. This was very much a fairy tale, I think, kind of novel. You know, you got the fairy folk. You've got the princes of the fairies. Sorry, sometimes something pops up in chat and I get distracted.
Oh, you're fine.
This thing minimized on me. Can't see it.
Probably a good thing I can't see it, because I would definitely, I have a very one-track mind. I'm not good at multitasking.
No, but basically it was just somebody talking about how the fact that they have all of Maggie's books. So it's all good. a couple of things I liked in that, like I said, it was probably, this is going to sound bad, but one of them has to be, it was my least quote unquote favorite. I still gave it a 4. So let's consider that where it's at.
That's a compliment.
Right. So it was my least favorite, but I still liked it and I would still tell people to read it. One of the things I love that you did in that, and I don't know, I don't read a lot of that genre, so I don't know if it's a normal thing, but the whole fact that the fairies can't use human crafts, cooking, baking, they can't do that type of stuff, which is kind of why they keep the humans around. And I thought that was a very interesting take on it. I love that part of it. Other thing I loved, and this is one of those things, I'm bringing this up now because there's certain things I see in all of your books, other than the fact that it's a young female protagonist. There's always somebody who isn't necessarily who we think they are. There's always somebody who we think we know what their motivation is, but we might not. And I'm giving these across all of them because I don't want to say anybody's name specifically and spoil anything. And of course, the other thing that I mentioned to you earlier, everybody seems to be an orphan. Now, the one question I had about that for you, again, is that just because you don't like writing parents?
There is a joke in YA that all the main characters are orphans because it can be just very difficult to give a young person responsible parents and also mm-hmm. have this young person running around without any kind of supervision. I will say Artemisia is not an orphan. She does have a living family. Right. She's just at a, you know, she's at a convent. Elizabeth is, for all intents and purposes, an orphan. We don't know if her parents are alive or not.
There's no relationship with her family.
It truly is just for convenience's sake. It is a lot easier to tell a story if the character is an orphan. I think that is why so many classic fantasy characters are orphans, just for that reason of convenience, I think.
Gotcha. So getting out of that, because like I said, that was the first one, which I still appreciated, even though that wasn't the, I don't normally read that type of book, the fairy folk thing, but I still enjoyed it. And in fact, the funny thing was, is the book that I read before I started reading yours, I finished up Winter Song by S.J. Jones, which was also very much a kind of a fairy folk type mm-hmm. book. And I actually enjoyed both of those. So I may have to change my feelings on how I feel about the fairy folk going forward, because both of those books were really good. Sorcery of Thorns, though, one of the things I loved about this book, and there's a couple things that automatically guarantee you at least a star. First of all, the fact that the heroes in Sorcery of Thorns aren't paladins or knights or soldiers or even wizards, they're librarians. The fact that your heroes are librarians automatically, you know, guaranteed plus one to whatever star rating you are going to get. The second thing that I loved, and everybody's probably gonna, if you've read the book, you probably think it's gonna be Silas. I liked Silas, but that wasn't the second big point for me. The second big point, I loved the, let's face it, sentient grimoires. And the relationship she has with those books. What gave you that idea?
That's actually a great question, because I actually have an interesting answer for it. I was really struggling after An Enchantment of Ravens because I signed a 2-book contract with my publisher, so I owed them another standalone. But I had no idea what I wanted to write next, and I had a difficult time with my mental health. I became very anxious because I started to wonder, you know, what if I can't write another good book? What if An Enchantment of Ravens was the only book that I was capable of writing? Or at least the only good book. I had previously written a bad first novel that's shelved forever and ever at the bottom of the ocean in a steel chest wrapped in chains. It was that bad. But I was having such a hard time with anxiety, and I finally one day just sat myself down and I said, okay, you are going to just today, right now, choose something to write a book about. And it has to be something that is very personally meaningful to you, because it needs to be something that you can write about passionately. Because I find that if I try to write about a book concept that I don't feel extremely passionately about, it just doesn't come through. That love doesn't come through. And I thought of books. I thought, a fantasy about books, about something that I love the most, which is books. and make them magical in some way. So that sort of cascadingly led to the idea of books that were sentient grimoires and had lives of their own, and a girl who was friends with them and grew up among them. And the whole idea of the great libraries as being these almost prison facilities in a way for these very dangerous, but also whimsical, fun books. And then of course the librarians have to carry swords because the books are so dangerous, and it all kind of spun out from there, I think.
I think one of the things I liked about it too is I think maybe a different author would have had her be that the only one that could necessarily quote unquote talk to the books. But you didn't do that with her. The other, for instance, the director knew that the books could talk, but they treated them as inherently evil. And let's face it, some of the stuff that those books are made out of is a little creepy. Just saying. The Book of Eyes, I can't even put contacts in. So no, that was not cool.
Oh.
You gave her that relationship with them, and it's not that other people thought she was crazy because she could talk to them, but that nobody else treated them as entities that might have, you know, personality, souls, and that they recognized that in her and they treated her differently. So I thought that was a very good story point in there. And like I said, I don't know that necessarily somebody else might have done it that same way, but I loved it. It made it for a very interesting character arc with her. And I didn't write it down, so now it's going to drive me crazy. Quill, her best friend, Catherine.
Oh, Catrian Quillworthy.
Quillworthy, that was it. Those two together, oh my goodness, that was such a perfect combination. And I like the fact that, for instance, I think we'll get to Vespertine in a minute, but in Vespertine, you know, you have that role kind of like Marguerite, but it's a different relationship. As to where I think in this one, I think all of us, especially at that age, knew somebody like her. You know, that one friend who is going to get you in trouble. I like the fact that you put that in at the end when she's talking about that other guy. It's like, I won't promise that I won't get him in trouble, but I promise I'll get him out of it.
Yeah.
I loved her as a character. And she was one of those ones where you never felt like she was forced into it. She wasn't there for all of the story, obviously. But when she was there, it was for a point, and it always felt seamless. It's not like, oh, and we've got to bring her back into the story again. But yet her as a character, sometimes I love the side characters almost more than I love the main characters. And of course, everybody's got to love Silas. No spoilers. I'm not going to tell you anything about Silas, but Silas, if you want semi-spoilers, we'll read the review. We're not going to spoil tonight. But Silas is a character too. I love not only his character as empathy and like that, but the fact that he was also very self-aware of who he was. So you had very deep, and by the time you get to Vespertine, forget about it. You have very deep, well thought out characters. Vespertine, especially, I didn't feel like, and I said this and when I did the review of the book, much kind of like I feel like Brandon Sanderson's characters a lot. All of your characters, even if they're only there for a paragraph, I felt like they're fully three-dimensional characters that you in your mind have a complete backstory for. They're all different. They're all complex. Nobody's just a two-dimensional, hey, we need a messenger to come in and, you know, pass off something.
Well, thank you. That actually means a lot to me because that's something that I find very difficult to pull off. And I'm always trying really hard to try to pull it off. And I don't succeed the first or second or third time. I'm always working on side characters and trying to make them more interesting. It's interesting, you particularly mentioned that Catrian's inclusion felt seamless. It reminds me of this, I suppose you would call it a meme that Neil Gaiman shared on social media, which is, it was a picture of a cross stitch, and it was showing the completed exterior side of the cross stitch, saying this is what readers see, and then it showed you the other side. You may have seen this actually, and you can see all the tangled threads and all the different colors of threads just kind of dangling down in this complete incomprehensible mess. And it said, this is what the authors see. And it just reminds me of that because whenever someone says, "Oh, you know, this came across really well," I on my side am seeing the 12 different drafts and many of them failures that went into pulling that off. So I really appreciate that. That
Oh,
is
nice.
something that I
Yeah, I didn't see that by Gaiman. I do know, and I feel bad because I can't remember what book it was, but I read a book one time where they were describing the fact that from, and that was their, that's how the character was describing it to another character, is that their God, whatever it was, I'll use lowercase g, you know, not God of the Bible or anything like that, but in this realm, and this, they saw everything from the top, so it was that same idea, it was that tapestry. As to where we see everything from underneath, and we can't tell what's going on, but their God knew what was best for them. So, you know, very much the same idea. But yeah, I love the fact that Neil did that. I wished I'd seen that now.
I think he shared the meme. I don't think he was the
Gotcha.
author of the meme, but it was
Oh.
such a great point. That was where I first stumbled across it because it really so beautifully explains that difference.
Gotcha. Are you on Blue Sky yet, by the way? I can't remember if I checked there.
I am not. I am
No, that's fine.
actually. I'm
I'm just
hardly
thinking,
on
it's like
social
Neil is
media.
on there all the time.
He's actually on Tumblr all the time, which is the one social media that I actually do use.
I did see your Tumblr. You kind of have an Instagram for anybody who's trying to look up Margaret later.
I do. That I would say if you are looking for official news, the Instagram is the place to follow me because when I do have any kind of official or important news, I will share that on Instagram. But when I'm sort of in between projects, I don't really log on to Instagram. I find it a little bit overwhelming, to be honest.
I will tease you just a little bit. MargaretRoberson.com or Rogerson.com. Sorry, I stumbled over
Oh, you're
that.
fine.
Yes, the Manor book coming soon.
Oh, thanks for the heads up. Yep, I
Yeah.
haven't updated that
Oh, you. I'm teasing you a little bit because trust me, almost every author I have had on, 2020 through 2024 is just one giant year. It's just nobody has their websites up to date, trust me.
Yeah, it is kind of a joke among agents. I think that they're always telling their authors, update your website, and we're never doing it.
Yeah, I think the ones that up to date their websites the most are the ones who don't currently have a project going on, to be honest.
It's a good procrastination tool to be, yeah, to be sure.
But like I said, 17, 19, 21, 23, I'm expecting a book from you in 25.
We might see one.
You
I
like those
cannot
odd numbers.
confirm or deny
That's fine.
officially,
That's fine.
but it is
I won't
certainly
hold you to it.
possible.
Let's get to Vespertine, which is hiding over my shoulder here.
Oh yeah.
I love that book, and I love that cover too. I had to have the Famine Witch up there to hold it up because it's a paperbacker. It kept falling over. Vespertine, like I said, that is my favorite book of yours so far. Again, I haven't read the novella, so you know the jury's still out on that one. But I absolutely love, and I'm not probably going to say as right as Rathanael.
Oh, Rathenail.
Rathanael,
I
okay.
just call it the Revenant, though.
You know that'll be fine too. But yeah, he as a character, I felt you walked a fine line on him. Where he could have been just this totally evil presence that he was put out to be, or he could have been comic relief. His biting sarcasm, especially when he would get anywhere near anything emotional, with all respect to Artemisia, he is the star of that book. That how hard was it for you to write a character that is, you know, to have that fact that he's basically, to an certain extent, the Revenants are kind of the embodiment of evil, but also to make him that personable without it becoming a caricature?
So ironically, I find the non-human characters in my books to be by far the easiest to write. So I think the Revenant of all the members of the cast in Vespertine was just by far the easiest. If the Revenant had narrated the whole book by itself, I probably would not have had as much trouble writing it, to be honest. I guess I think it's a theme in all of my books. It's essentially what I feel that I write books about, is finding the humanity in the inhuman. These creatures that people perceive as being non-human or not being able to experience emotion and are misunderstood. And through the process of a relationship with a main character, with a human character, you see the humanity in them. I think that's really going to be probably the only thing that I ever write books about, just different iterations of that same concept, because it for some reason just fascinates me. I think maybe coming from a background of, I just always felt sort of like I didn't quite fit in with other people. You know, I think that's a pretty common for writers and for introverts in general, but I guess that's just something that I'm fascinated with exploring in fiction. And therefore, characters like the Revenant, I always just find so much fun to write. And I guess I didn't really have in my mind the idea that I needed to balance the humor element with the more frightening, serious, or genuinely emotional element. Because for me, those two things complement each other. I think it's almost like light and shadow in a piece of artwork, right? You need you need both of them to create the greatest effect. So yeah, I suppose I just approached it more that way.
Well, you say that, but I don't think every author manages to pull it off, though. Like I said, I loved him as a character. The other thing I loved about the fact, and this was like a minor thing, but I think it really helped the relationship between them, is, as obviously, this is not going to be a spoiler for anybody who spends more than 5 minutes in Vespertine, you know, he is inhabiting her. Like I said on the review that I did for it, possession is 9/10 of the law, because I can't help making dad jokes. But the fact that she actually has to speak for him to hear her questions, stuff like that. And it's not just he's possessing her, but he doesn't necessarily have that interaction with her mind where he can't just read her thoughts, which I feel a lot of authors do that with this type of story. But I think that's also because it makes it easier. The fact that when she's in a situation where she needs to talk to him, she's got to think about, okay, who's watching me, so it doesn't look like I'm an idiot talking to myself.
Yeah. I did that on purpose, actually. I considered the idea of having her be able to speak to the Revenant inside of her head. But I thought, you know, this is a character who, to begin with, is quite nonverbal and quite reluctant to speak to others out loud. And I thought it would be an interesting way of developing her character and bringing her a little bit more out into the world. Because if she were spending all of that time inside her head, she's a very sort of inward character to begin with. So if she never had that actual verbal dialogue element, I felt that it would just feel as though we were living too deeply inside of her head all the time. And I do also like the inconvenience of her not being able to speak to the Revenant in public without coming up with some kind of excuse, like she's praying or something of that nature, which is actually quite funny. I find that inconvenience creates opportunity. I think that things that are like that, if you go the easy route, you are sometimes missing out on really good material, really good challenges for the character to face, and just really fun setups for scenes. And also creating challenges for the main character to overcome, because if it were that easy, if she could just speak to the Revenant in her head at any time, you would just be missing out on a lot of opportunities, I feel.
Which I get, but like I said, I think I've read a lot of, not necessarily Revenants, but this type of character where somebody is sharing their body. And almost every time you see it, it's just like I just think in my head and they think back. And so I thought this one really, especially in certain situations you put her in, it really made a difference. And oh my goodness, I just blanked on his name. One of the guys I wanted to talk about, because I thought it was another good point about having a character that's there for a specific reason, but you also still made really three-dimensional. And I can't remember his name, the big guy. You know who I'm talking about.
Jean or Jean, depending
on your French. Yes, okay. Began with a J, and then I couldn't remember, and I started second-guessing myself. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that where he starts from is not how we see him throughout that whole thing. I think it would have been very easy to make him Hordor from Lord of the Rings. But the fact that you see him as also as he was before that, where he's kind of dealing with it. I mean, basically, and I'm a veteran, so I'm not making fun of light of this at all, but basically he's kind of got PTSD.
He does,
yes. That's the situation where we find him in. But again, even though he's there for specific reasons in some of those scenes, I still feel like you took us through the fact that he's still a real person inside of that, and it wasn't just this guy who shut down because of what happened. Mm-hmm. And as for your side characters, I missed this when we were talking about it earlier because you talk about how much you love your side characters. I thoroughly enjoyed Man March from Ravens. Her half-sisters.
Oh, yes. Okay, sorry. I heard that as one word, and I was like, wait.
Sorry, yes. May yeah. and March.
Yes,
I really enjoyed them.
Oh, thank
I think
so
a lot
much.
Of your side characters get the best lines.
Yes.
with the exception of, I think Nathaniel got a lot of the best lines in Sorcery.
Yeah, I feel like side characters can get away with some stuff that the main characters can't sometimes.
Yeah, I did have to, I put aside to use at some point, you know, I smell of sandalwood and masculine allure.
Never mind.
I can totally see some guy trying to pull that off. So, all right. I'm not seeing a huge amount of, I've seen some comments. I'm not seeing a huge amount of questions in the chat. Is there anything that obviously, if you want to say anything about Mysteries of Manor, of Thorn Manor, which I didn't get to, but is there anything else that a question maybe you were expecting or something just that you would like to answer, even though it wasn't asked?
I think one thing that's fun is research. Sometimes I get asked the question, what's the most interesting thing that you've researched recently for a book? I think that my favorite thing is the history of mechanical lifts, like elevators, because I was trying to figure out whether it would be historically appropriate to have a mechanical steam-powered elevator in the work that I'm currently working on, which might be actually a little vague clue as to what I'm working on. Because it does suggest a time period, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
But I did learn some interesting things about lifts. Apparently, they were used in the early 1800s, which is a bit earlier than I expected. Not as many safety precautions, however. They look quite cool. If you Google Victorian elevators or Victorian lifts, they are very cool looking and kind of scary looking, actually.
Well, I think a lot of things before, let's say, about 1970 didn't have a whole lot of safety features involved.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of us really shouldn't be.
It's true.
All right. Covered that. Okay, so obviously we don't have any details. You have kind of answered the question, are you currently working on something? We know you're working on something. You are not sharing anything specific yet, which is completely fine. I get that. What are you reading right now?
I am reading a Agatha Christie novel, The Curious Affair at Styles, which is the first Poirot novel. Mm-hmm. It's fun. It's actually the first time I've ever read a mystery genre novel. I've read a lot of fantasy and science fiction with a mystery element in it, but I've never read a straight genre mystery. So it's quite fun. I'm about halfway through. I don't think I'm a mystery person, but I am really enjoying it because Agatha Christie is an exceptional writer. Very funny.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of with you. I'm a very specific mystery person. I've read some Brian Freeman. I love some of his stuff. I've read, obviously, like you said, you talked about the mixing genre thing. The Dresden Files, to a certain extent, kind of has that detective mystery thing going for it. Fantasy is my love. I'm usually stuck in fantasy. Let's face that. I did want to bring up something because you talked about the fact that your first novel is in a locked vault at the bottom of the sea. I've seen that go both ways. I know I've known a couple other authors who are kind of the same thing. It's like, we shall never speak of this book again. But I also know that, and I hate that I'm blanking on this, but I hadn't planned on it ahead of time. William Kent Kruger, one of his last books, he had been working on this, he said, for like 4 or 5 decades. It's the book that he ever always wanted, is one of the books he always wanted to write. But he likes to tell people, but I had to get to 70 before I could, you know, actually tell the story. So there's a small kernel of chance that you might find something useful out of that at some point, but I won't hold you to it. And I won't blame you if we don't. And of course, one of the things I have no problem. I am not one of those Amazon haters. However, I am a complete lover of brick and mortars. And as much as I already know your answer to this question, I still like to give the authors a chance. Shout out to your favorite bookstore.
Well, I might throw you for a loop because I actually have two right now. I have two favorite books. So Joseph Beth in Cincinnati is an amazing local bookstore in Cincinnati. It's actually the first bookstore that I have memories of as a child because my parents used to bring me there a lot when I was young. I grew up in Hyde Park, which was just right nearby. The other bookstore I would love to give a shout out to is The Bookshelf in Madeira, which is in Cincinnati. It's a really small, really tiny, cozy, little, very personal bookstore. So if you're looking for something really small and really cozy, you should go to The Bookshelf. And they're my two local favorite bookstores.
No, perfect, perfect. Like I said, I get that if somebody doesn't have a brick and mortar bookstore around, you know, I get ordering from Amazon or something like that. But if you have a local bookstore, keep them afloat. That's all I'm asking. Yeah. All right. So I don't know that I have any other questions, queries, or conundrums. Chat doesn't look like it has any specific ones either. I am glad that this seems to have gone okay, since, like I said, this is my first time using StreamYard and my first time doing a YouTube Live. I used to do these on Twitch all the time. But all right. So other than that, I think I'm just going to thank you for hopping on. You were the second requested author that I have had. I've had a lot of authors that I personally had read and had looked forward to, and for whatever reason, conned them into coming on my podcast. But I've had two where I've sat there and I've just asked, in both cases, my children, they're both in their 20s. First one was Elise Stevens a couple years ago. My son had read a book by her that he really liked. And this one, both of my children said that you are one of their favorite authors. Aww. And that I had to read Vespertine, which is why I read it first out of order. And then all of your other stuff paled in comparison. I'm sorry.
Oh, that means so much to me, though. Thank you. I love hearing that. Thank you so much.
You are. And apparently, according to my daughter, like all of her friends love your work. So you were among the bookstore people. You are apparently very, very popular. And like I said, I am definitely, even though I've done reading for this interview, I saw how Sorcery of Thorns ended. I am going to read that novella because I got to know what happens next. Talk about that. That is a way to end a book if you want somebody to come around for book two. I'm just going to tell you that right now. And I am totally looking forward to see what you might have coming down in the future.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm very excited to be able to share it with everybody one day and not be so secretive.
Hey, but you know, you got to keep the interest up. It's all good. All right. Thank you again, Margaret. Thank you for the people I've seen in the chat. I know, you know, book people are often introverts, so I get the fact that not everybody necessarily has something to say, but I do see that there are people lurking in there. So I appreciate you joining us. And if you have not read anything by Margaret Rogerson yet, which I have a hard time believing if you bothered to come, you know, check me out because nobody's here for me. Check it out. And like I said, even if you're not a quote unquote YA fan, you have to read Vespertine. It's not a question. Check it out. All right. Thanks again, Margaret. And we will catch you hopefully again sometime.
Thank you so much for having me. It was an honor and I had such a great time.
All right.